This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy. The Biden administration's top medical advisor on the pandemic said Sunday the U.S. is actively looking at ways to boost India as it grapples with surging coronavirus cases. Dr. Anthony Fauci told ABC's This Week that several measures are being considered, including sending over oxygen supplies, COVID-19 tests, drug treatments, and personal protective equipment. The outbreak in India adds to the pressure on President Biden to provide vaccines to other countries. Biden has said the U.S. will not begin doing so until it has enough supplies at home. Britain, France, and Germany also say they will send aid, as will India's arch foe, Pakistan. The death toll from a massive fire at a Baghdad hospital for coronavirus patients rose to at least 82 Sunday, as anxious families searched for missing relatives and the government suspended key health officials for alleged negligence. The flames, described by one witness as volcanoes of fire, swept through the intensive care unit of the hospital, which tends exclusively to COVID-19 patients with severe symptoms. Tokyo Olympics organizers and the IOC are to unveil new plans this week to explain how 15,400 Olympic and Paralympic athletes can compete in Japan when the games open in 3 months in the middle of the pandemic. The rollout of the second edition of the so-called playbooks and IOC guidebook explaining how the games can be pulled off comes as Tokyo, Osaka, and several other areas have been placed under a third state of emergency. This is VOA News. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is to make the case before the United Nations members on Monday that now is the time for global leaders to begin putting serious work into how they respond to the next global pandemic. The virtual address, Harris's second to a U.N. body since her inauguration, will come as the United States makes progress on vaccinating the public and much of the world struggles to acquire vaccines. The Biden administration will mark its first 100 days in office this week. Protesters in Paris and other French cities on Sunday denounced a ruling by France's higher court that the killer of a Jewish woman, Sara Halimi, was not criminally responsible and therefore could not go on trial. Thousands of people filled the Place in Paris in front of the Eiffel Tower, answering a call by Jewish associations and groups fighting anti-Semitism who say that justice has not been done there. Other protests took place in Marseille and other locations. The announcement that the killer would not be sent to trial sparked outrage among the French and international Jewish community. The Holy City of Jerusalem is a tinderbox of competing religious and political claims. These have repeatedly triggered bouts of Israeli-Palestinian violence in the latest round of unrest, which there have been some additional sparks to the mighty clashes and nightly clashes between Palestinian crowds and Israeli police. These include Jewish extremists who, emboldened by their political patrons' recent election to parliament, staged a provocative march to Jerusalem's World Old City, chanting death to the Arabs, rocket fire at the Gaza Strip, and political posturing by Israelis and Palestinian leaders have added to combustible mixes. Recapping our top story, the Biden administration now says top medical advisors on the pandemic will actively look for ways to boost aid to India as it grapples with surging coronavirus cases. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Chadian civil society organizations call for protest tomorrow, Tuesday.
They focus about France. They contest the military council. Adding to that, they say that they want civil transition, not military transition.
Military shootout in Mogadishu over Somalia's election impasse. A 77% trial efficiency of Oxford University's new malaria vaccine. Malawi government to destroy thousands of expired COVID-19 vaccine doses despite calls not to do so. And Tanzania's main opposition sets conditions for his return from exile.
It is not a question of being ready as in buying a ticket. That is the easiest part. It is about going back to Tanzania and being safe. Now, for that to happen, I need security guarantees from the government.
And calls to free Nigerian musician Yahya Sharif Aminu. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Civil society organizations in Chad have called for a protest tomorrow, Tuesday, to demand the disbandment of the Transitional Military Council. The council is led by General Mohamed Idriss Déby, the son of the late President Idriss Déby, who was laid to rest last Friday. Political parties have already called on Chadians not to respect the orders of the military council. They want the United Nations and the African Union to facilitate a comprehensive dialogue that will lead to democratic transition. Clement Abayifuta is president of the Association of Victims of Former Chadian President Issa Habre's Crimes. He says the protesters will also denounce France's involvement in Chad.
Civil society and opposition party politics and many organizations in the ground, they are involved to protest on Tuesday morning. They focus about France. They contest the military council. So this is the main reason that on Tuesday they will manifest. Adding to that, they say that they want civil transition, not military transition. So they are not ready to accept that the son of the last president can rule the country. All the people, more of them, refuse to accept that. So their attention is focused on the change in the country with new skill of development and security of the country.
The civil society, whoever is planning the demonstration, they are saying they want the protection of the African Union and the United Nations. Why are they making this demand? Why not Chadian soldiers to protect them?
They ask African Union because they no longer believe in our military group. They think and they hope that United States and the African Union are more sensitive about their need and their hope. So, you know, in this country, the civil society don't expect new thing for military council. So they come back to ask with humility and in the urgent size that United States and African Union, who they said by writing that they're not longer accept that this council military lead the country or rule for the future of our country.
Clement Abayifuta is the president of the Association of Victims of Former Chadian President Issa Habre's Crimes. You're speaking with us from the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. Somalia's political stalemate over elections spilled over to the military on Sunday, resulting in gun battle in the capital, Mogadishu. Former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed alleged that soldiers loyal to President Mohamed Farmajo attacked his house on Sunday. In return, soldiers from outside Mogadishu attacked those loyal to President Farmajo. President Farmajo, whose term ended in February this year, is refusing to step down or facilitate the holding of free and fair elections. Abdul Razak Omar Mohamed is the Somali Member of Parliament and former Security Minister.
The situation in Rhodesia is very dire. There's a high tension right now. And all started when Somali army vacated their positions and came to Mogadishu to challenge the term extension of President Farmajo. I can hear the exchange of heavy weapons right now between the army that's the term extension and the army that's loyal to President Farmajo. This evening, the army that is loyal to President Farmajo tried to attack the residence of former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, but his security repulsed them. With additional reinforcements, they tried to attack again the residence of Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, and they were repulsed again.
The former president, does he recognize the presidency right now of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo?
No. Actually, it's not only the former president that doesn't recognize President Farmajo as the legitimate president, but all Somalis believe that the current president Farmajo, whose term has expired in February 2021, has no legitimacy to rule. In our constitution, it's very clear there are provisions that clearly state that the term of office for the president is 4 years. So his term has expired. He doesn't have any legitimacy to govern this country anymore.
What do you see as the way out of this? Because it seems if it continues like this, is this a recipe for a wider conflict?
I agree with you, James. It's a recipe for a wider conflict. And the security implications are that the army that have vacated their bases, Al-Shabaab will exploit that opportunity and they will take over those areas where they have vacated. Unfortunately, that's what is going to happen. You know that we have always said that the conflict should be resolved through a peaceful mechanism. The African Union has issued a statement saying that the principle is not to go back to the negotiation table, and that they found also they condemned the term extension of the parliament. Unfortunately, yesterday, the information minister of the federal government of Somalia held a press conference in which he said that the extension is valid and the president has 2 more years to stay in power, complicating the situation as well.
It's always nice to talk with you, and thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, James.
Abdulrazak Omar Mohammed is a Somali member of parliament and a former security minister. He was speaking with us from the Somali capital, Mogadishu. Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, says if new President Samia Suluhu Hassan wants to make good on her call for national reconciliation, she should start by righting the wrongs committed against him and the Tanzanian people by her predecessor, the late President John Magufuli. Lissu fled into exile to Belgium last year following the October 28 presidential election because he said he feared for his life. Lissu says he's ready to return to Tanzania, but in order for that to happen, the Tanzanian government must guarantee his safety and meet other demands.
It is not a question of being ready as in buying a ticket. That is the easiest part. It is about going back to Tanzania and being safe. Now, for that to happen, I need security guarantees from the government. And for me to take the government seriously, the government must tell me and tell the people who was forced behind the assassination attempt in 2017. What are they going to do about those hired killers? The government needs to tell me that I will be a free person. As you may remember, there are 6 pending criminal cases in the Tanzanian courts against me.
About your security, I think I was reading, it's the police director that said that the police are there to provide security for all Tanzanians. So why do you want special security?
Well, not all Tanzanians were shot 16 times in 2017. I was. Not all Tanzanians have been subjected to death threats. I have been subjected to death threats. Not all Tanzanians have been repeatedly arrested by the police on politically motivated charges. I have. And therefore, given all that, I cannot be equated to all other Tanzanians because they have not gone through what I went through. They are not in exile. I am.
You are also demanding the freedom of political prisoners. Are there political prisoners in Tanzania now?
They are political prisoners as we speak. They are Tanzanians, members of my party, who are in prison as we speak, arrested on completely trumped-up charges of economic offenses, money laundering, drug dealing, and all this because they dared to criticize the former president, Magufuli.
President Samia Suluhu Hassan has made some policy pronouncements since coming to power that some say set her apart from her predecessor, the late President Magufuli. First of all, what do you think about the new president? And do you think you can be an opposition during her administration?
I was very optimistic the first few days after President Samia Suluhu Hassan took office. She made some welcome remarks about national reconciliation. Those were during the first few days. But yesterday, she addressed the nation through her address to the National Assembly. And in 92 minutes of speech, she said absolutely nothing about the illegal ban on political activity that came into force with Magufuli. She said absolutely nothing about the political prisoners who are in prisons because of the Magufuli reign of terror. She spent only 1 minute to talk about her plans to meet political party leaders on an undisclosed date. Otherwise, she made it very clear that, as she said, she and Magufuli are one and the same thing. So my initial optimism that we are going to see a change of course has been dampened very much after yesterday. It was a major missed opportunity as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Lisu, it's always nice to talk with you. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Tundu Lisu is Tanzania's main opposition leader. He was speaking with us from TNN, Belgium. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 26. Severe disruption to insecticide, treated mosquito nets, campaigns, and inaccessibility to anti-malaria medicines could lead to a doubling of the number of malaria deaths in sub-Saharan Africa this year compared to 2018. This, according to a World Health Organization report released for this year's World Malaria Day, which was yesterday, April 25th. WHO says Africa accounts for more than 90% of malaria infections and deaths globally. As Maureen Odhiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, malaria kills more children and pregnant women in Kenya. But help is on the way from Oxford University, which announced 77% trial efficiency of its R21 Matrix-M malaria vaccine.
Malaria is a life-threatening disease caused by parasites that are transmitted to people through mosquito bites. Although malaria is curable, the World Health Organization estimates that the disease kills more than 400,000 people globally, most of them being children, as sub-Saharan Africa accounts for 94% of the deaths. Dr. Nathan Mulure, head of public affairs at Novartis in sub-Saharan Africa, said that most countries in Africa are affected by simple malaria, the type of malaria that is not life-threatening, as Congo, Nigeria, and Uganda carry the highest burden of malaria cases in Africa.
There are two types of malaria, simple malaria or uncomplicated malaria, and there's complicated malaria. So in uncomplicated malaria is where you have fever, joint pains, lack of appetite. You can still maybe walk, you're not too sick. If you look at the parasite blood count, it's not too high. But simple malaria can actually complicate, can worsen into complicated malaria.
Former Kenya rugby sevens coach Benjamin Ayimba is battling cerebral malaria, a severe type of malaria that affects the brain. According to the family, Ayimba has been critically ill of the severe malaria for months now.
My brother is truly sick. He's struggling for his life, but he's still there. And we thank God for everything and for his life and for what he's given to this nation.
Dr. Mulure says cerebral malaria can cause a lot of damages to the brain that can as well lead to stroke.
In the case of cerebral malaria, what really happens is that the parasites have really affected the red blood cells, and in the small blood vessels of the brain, these parasites can actually block the blood vessels, and cause stroke-like features and even cause nerve damage.
Scientists have been on the run to develop malaria vaccines for years now, and a new malaria vaccine is being hailed as a game changer in the fight to eliminate the disease. R21 Matrix M, the Oxford Institute malaria vaccine, has proved 77% effective at preventing infection and is now entering larger human trials to rule out any side effects. Senior advisor, African Leaders Malaria Alliance, Dr. Willis Akwale, said that the vaccine trial in Burkina Faso is life-changing for sub-Saharan Africa.
Malaria can be very dynamic. The vectors in Burkina Faso, the parasite dynamics within regions can vary. So I predict they want to test it. I had four countries, and we are hoping that those four countries will offer diversity in terms of malaria transmission.
According to WHO, despite the challenges posed by COVID-19 pandemic, a number of countries reported zero indigenous malaria cases in 2020. WHO says in every 2 minutes, a child dies of malaria. And the 2021 malaria theme is Zero Malaria, with the tagline, every malaria case is preventable and every malaria death is unacceptable. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Malawi's government says it will go ahead with plans to destroy thousands of COVID-19 vaccine doses despite calls from the World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control not to destroy them. The Malawi government says the appeal has not only come too late, but it is not applicable to Malawi's situation. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi government authorities say the appeals from the World Health Organization and the Africa CDC have come too late to prevent the destruction of thousands of doses of expired COVID-19 vaccine. Officials said the 16,440 doses of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine that expired on April 13 have already been removed from cold storage. Thursday, the WHO and Africa CDC had urged African countries not to destroy the vaccine that may have been expired, saying it is still usable. Dr. Charles Mansambo is Malawi's Secretary for Health.
And it's also a requirement that every vial that's manufactured has an expiry date beyond which it cannot be used. In this case, we cannot proceed to use this because the vial clearly states the expiry date, and any doctor, any physician would not be forgiven in the event of anything happening after knowingly used a vial that was clearly labeled as having expired.
The expired vaccine is part of 102,000 dose donation the country received in March from the African Union. Malawi and South Sudan earlier announced plans to destroy about 70,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine that expired last month. Mansambo also says using the expired vaccine would scare people from taking the jabs from the remaining stock.
If we leave or store these expired vaccines, that would be a big blow to our vaccination drive. People will not come. Now, even though we're not using them, people have been hesitant to come because they feel that they might be given the expired vaccines.
Mansambo says the country may be considering extending the shelf life of the remaining stock of vaccine received through the COVAX facility and from the Indian government that expires in June and July. George Jobe is the executive director for Malawi Health Equity Network. He says using the expired COVID-19 vaccine would create a negative attitude in people.
We can have phobia from Malawians, which we should not. If the vaccines are safe, the CDC can take the expired vaccines or the WHO and donate it to the developed countries. But we have to witness the day the vaccines are leaving Malawi.
Dr. Mansambo says destroying the expired vaccine is in line with the Malawi's government guidelines on expired pharmaceutical products. He says the government will soon announce the date when it will publicly destroy the expired vaccine in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Nigerian musician Yahaya Sharif Aminu is currently detained in northern Nigeria and is undergoing a retrial after a religious court in Kano sentenced him to death last year for a song he shared via WhatsApp. John Saad Saheed is West Africa coordinator for Frimusi, which advocates for the rights of freedom of musicians around the world. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the case and the plight of Sharif Aminu.
Yahya's case is very peculiar. He's right now sentenced to death in Kano, because of his song that the Islamic Sharia court says is blasphemous against the Islamic Holy Prophet Muhammad. So currently he's in jail, and anytime he can be killed. So that's the situation for Yahya. So we are campaigning for his release, immediate release.
And he faces the death penalty, according to your release. Is this common? Are there other artists in this position in Nigeria?
No, for now, Yahya is the only one in Nigeria who is facing the death sentence, which has been put on him by the Sharia court in Kano.
When you say Sharia court in Kano, then, is it the federal official government that's doing it, or is it the religious courts that are outside of the federal system?
It's a religious court that is outside of the federal system.
How does this work, then? Is this technically illegal when it comes to the Nigerian constitution?
I don't know much about the Nigerian constitution, but what I can see is that in Kano, or in this Muslim-dominated northern part of Nigeria, the Sharia court in some parts is well, it's recognized and it's part of the legal system.
That was John Saheed, West Africa coordinator for Frimusi. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown, Sierra Leone. For Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with mixed martial art news, where Nigerian-born American Kamaru Usman defended his Ultimate Fighting Champion welterweight belt after he knocked Jorge Masvidal out in the second round at the UFC 261 in the early hours of Sunday to truly stake his claim as an all-time great welterweight champion. The Nigerian nightmare dominated and put a stamp on his rivalry with Masvidal in front of 15,000 fans in Jacksonville, Florida, dropping Masvidal with a crushing right hand and flowing up on the ground for a knockout victory at 1 minute 2 seconds of the second round in the main event of the UFC 261 in Florida. With the victory, Usman wins improved his record to 19-1 and extended his unbeaten run to 18 fights, including 14 straight victories in the UFC.
I put a lot of time into this, and shout out to Masvidal. I mean, he I had to bring my A game. He elevated me. He gave me that extra oomph that I needed, in training. So, I'm just blessed to be in this time right now. I have big goals for myself, and I want to see it truly on Monday, pound for pound. Right now, I'm the best fighter on the planet.
In athletics news, with the Tokyo Olympic Games less than 100 days away, 10,000-meter world champion Joshua Cheptegei took to the tracks at the weekend at the Mandela National Stadium in Nambole, Uganda, as he started preparations for the games. The world champion came third in a time of 3 minutes 37.36 seconds in a race won by Ugandan middleweight distance runner Ronald Musagala. Joshua Cheptegei, the Ugandan long-distance king, took part in the 1,500-meter race as he looks to start building up speed for the Tokyo Games.
This is my first track race of the year, and I chose to run in 1500 to test my speed as a part of the preparations for the Olympic Games. And at times it gets more exciting, and no one wants to do the race, so you have to get some knowledge and some mechanism for trying to win the race, even if it is a slow race.
The 24-year-old currently owns the world record over the same distance, having broken it last year in Valencia. In cricket news, South Africa's future participation in international tournaments is in fresh doubt after the country's sports minister de-recognized Cricket South Africa. Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, Nathi Mtemtewa, stripped the CSA's members' council, made up of the presidents of the 14 provisional unions, of the right to run the game. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, April 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have